You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to another edition of The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. We're produced by Jack Connell, musical producer, my son, Sam Brandt. That's the music of him you hear under us. We're presented, as always, by DraftKings. It's a special podcast. Every 4, 5, 6 weeks, I get together with my old friend and colleague on this network, Ross Tucker, on the DraftKings network. And Ross and I spend time talking this week about the rule changes in the NFL, the Christmas games in the NFL, pay cuts, off-season programs. That's all coming. We did a simulcast on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and here on the Business of Sports Podcast. That's all coming your way in just a few minutes, but I want to give you some rants, as I always do, Brant's rants, about what I see in the week in sports, what I see in the business of sports, giving you what I hope are sort of differentiated insights into what's going on. First, let's talk. I'm recording this on Tuesday, April 2nd. Last night was Women's Basketball Central. We, of course, had UConn with Paige Beckers against USC with Juju Watkins. What a game that was late into the evening. But the main event was before that, LSU and their polarizing coach, Kim Mulkey, who's been the focus of some media this week, playing Iowa and the inimitable Caitlin Clark. And I talk about this a little bit with Ross, but let me just say this. She has changed the game. She's the most talked about player in basketball, not pro basketball, not college basketball, not men's basketball, not women's basketball, but all of the above. This guard for University of Iowa women's basketball team. She plays with a selflessness while she's getting 41 points. It's just incredible to watch. And I, like everyone, man, woman, child, was watching that game. And it was appointment viewing on a Monday night in early April. She's changed the game. And I don't know what's going to happen to women's basketball writ large next year. I don't think that Iowa basketball will be, I don't know, a fraction as popular next year, no matter who they have on the team. Obviously, there's going to be some name value left over from her. But she has left, and I've gotten in little battles about whether she would have been better off staying at Iowa after these, what may be the next two games. But she's got to go. Financially, the business side, she's got to go, because she'll get whatever she gets from the WNBA salary. I know that's not a lot, but she's going to bring along these endorsements. They're not going away. They're going to increase. She's already done a couple new deals, Gainbridge, a couple others since she signed. And I talked to one of her agents at Excel. They're not doing anything less than seven figures right now, right? They're not doing anything less than seven figures for Caitlin Clark's endorsements, not NIL, real endorsements going forward as she turns pro. So there is no chance in hell that she's making less as a pro than she would have made if she's staying at Iowa. But let's savor her remaining time at Iowa, maybe one, maybe two games. Let's see it happen. Because she's a force multiplier. I talk about this all the time. She's a force multiplier for Iowa basketball, for women's basketball, for college basketball. Will she be that for the WNBA? I think so. Good market, Indiana. She'll be on all the time, every time they're on. Yes, I think she'll be that for that league as well. Maybe not to the extent of women's college basketball, but in a way that no one's ever been for the WNBA. The other thing about college basketball in general, this is a crazy time, as I talk about all the time, an inflection point in college basketball. You know everything, all the lawsuits circling. There's a lawsuit about everything going on against the NCAA, and the NCAA is going to lose them all because you can't treat student athletes different than students and come into an antitrust court and expect any positive response from a judge. You just can't. You can't allow a music student to go make whatever he or she is going to make from the Boston Philharmonic and restrict athletes. You can't. You can't allow a chemistry major to go work for Dow Chemical for whatever they're going to pay him and restrict student athletes. You can't. You just can't. So they're going to lose in court all the time. And now we have NIL, which is no longer NIL. NIL is now a catchphrase for pay for play. Because of the rules taken off by the courts, NIL is just paying to play. And now we're just seeing you pay to come here, you pay to play. You pay to retain someone, you're paying to play. You pay to have someone move to your school, you're paying to play. And the real force multiplier in this is the transfer portal, because you can transfer every year. So no one's on anything longer than a one-year contract. And there's a massive influx of new players every year. And you can't get used to the players, and everyone's lamenting. But listen, we can complain, we can carp, we can lament, we can criticize, but the game brings us back. The game brings us back. I watched the Final Four this weekend. I was enthralled by DJ Burns, by Zach Edey, by Dalton Connect, by the force of UConn basketball. All these games, Alabama, I mean, it brings us back. With all the chaos, the Wild West going on in college sports, college basketball even, it brings us back. You know, we talk about it, I talk about it, I teach about it, I lecture about it, I comment about it. It's all there, right? It's all brings us back because we love the sport. Okay. So at the end of the day, we want the game. We love March Madness, which is now spilled into April. It's here, and we love it. With all the turmoil in college sports, that's where we are. Okay, next thing. Minnesota Timberwolves. This is one of the most interesting stories in franchise acquisition that I've seen in a long time. So to back it up, 2021, Glenn Taylor, the owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, makes a deal with two primary buyers. One is a guy named Lore, L-O-R-E, but the more famous partner is, of course, Alex Rodriguez. The deal was for a valuation of $1.5 billion. We'll get back to that valuation in a minute, but usually you don't see sales of major franchises that are on installment plans. That's what it was. It's a layaway plan for the Minnesota Timberwolves, where they had to come up with 40%, which they did in 2021, and now 40%, which they had to in March of 2024. But according to reports, they didn't. And Glenn Taylor pulled the sale. So he pulls the sale. A-Rod will not, as we speak, become owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, a lot of things are going on here. Number one, what I just said, what the heck's going on with an installment plan to buy an NBA franchise, which is worth billions? Number two is the billions part. $1.5 billion is a bargain, and Glenn Taylor probably knows that right now. This franchise is probably worth $2.5 billion. It's got the best young American star in basketball with Anthony Edwards. It's a number one, two, or three seed in the West. It's doing well. It's pointing north. Yes, it's a good franchise to get in on. But so Rodriguez and Lohr say it's seller's remorse. Glenn Taylor says they missed the payment. I'm pulling it. It's off. All of this comes down to, you know my saying, there will be lawyers. This seems to be an easy solution to figure out who's right and who's wrong. Look at the document. Look at the lawyer's language. Look at the contract language. In this installment language, it says something to the effect of, if Lohr and Rodriguez don't make the payment in March of 2024 in full, whatever that is, or maybe it's whatever payment, the seller, Glenn Taylor, has these rights spelled out. And if one of those rights was to invalidate the purchase, it's gone. Now, I would think Lohr and Rodriguez still have 40% of the franchise, but that's not the controlling interest, because they bought 40% of the franchise in 2021. That's done. So I'm not saying Lohr and Rodriguez are going to be out, but they're not going to be controlling owners if the language says they don't come with the payment in full in March of 2024, the deal is off. At least the deal beyond the 40%. Now, you know lawyers are involved now. Can they work it out? Is the purchase price going to go up based on them defaulting on the payment? A lot to be worked out here. But this is a fascinating story. Alex Rodriguez is no longer buying the Timberwolves as of today, but we got to check the language, check the lawyers. He has 40% with his partner, but is that going to be enough? Is that okay? Well, they don't have controlling interest. That's still with Glenn Taylor, the current, former, and it looks like future majority owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay, last thing before an announcement. Rashee Rice. This is hits home a little bit. My son has graduated SMU recently, and he was he knew Rashee Rice. Rashee Rice is around SMU still. So it's hard to see this as someone that I kind of got to know a little bit, not personally, but just being around SMU and hearing about Rashee Rice, hearing from agents that were trying to get Rashee Rice, did get Rashee Rice, were fired by Rashee Rice. Anyways, involved in this drag racing on the Dallas highways. Unfortunately, I've seen some of that when I've been driving on Dallas highways. It's not a good situation. Again, there will be lawyers. There are lawyers. There are injuries involved. There's drag racing involved. There's a leased Lamborghini involved that allegedly is leased to Rice. Was Rice in the driver's seat of the Corvette? There's a lot to happen here. He's going to face issues with the law potentially, face issues with the NFL potentially, face issues with the Chiefs potentially. It's not good. What do you do in these situations? Well, from a legal perspective, you shut up, which he is doing. He is doing. Everyone wants to hear from him, but from a legal perspective, you don't. Don't talk. And Rice is doing that. He's got a lawyer, Royce West, down there. We'll see where it goes. But not a good look for the Chiefs. And the Chiefs have had some character issues over the years. Remember Tyreek Hill and involved with a pregnant girlfriend and some issues there. They kind of were quiet about it, hoped, and it did kind of go away. Chiefs have had issues with Andy Reid's son, kind of waited it out, and now it's kind of going away. You know, it's just the perfume of winning is going to cover up a lot of things, but these things do come out now and then. So I hope Rashee Rice learns from this. And again, lucky there are no serious injuries. It's just a stroke of luck. But in terms of no one affected, I mean, Mark Donovan from the Chiefs, who, by the way, are having a vote today on getting some public money for the stadium along with the Kansas City Royals, said, frankly, there are no injuries. But, you know, there's damage. Whether they're minor injuries or major injuries, that's damage. There was an Uber driver involved. I think he got T-boned, so he can't make money off his Uber. He's got to rent a new car. He's got to figure out something. That's damage. People are injured. People have cars that are broken up. That's damage. The owner of the place that rented the Lamborghini, he's got a busted up Lamborghini. It's totaled. That's damage. So for the Chiefs to say we're lucky there wasn't really any, whatever he said, that's wrong. That's wrong. I mean, have some situational awareness, have some tone in this. Okay. All right. I'm going to say this with Ross when you hear my with Ross, but again, I want to say it here again. We're going to have if you're around Philly on Friday, Villanova Law, I'm having a symposium. I do it every year. I'll play you clips from it as we go forward. This year, it's on changing role of media streaming. I'll have league executives talking about media, I'll have representatives from Amazon, from NBC Peacock, commentators from Front Office Sports, and of course, media personalities in the Philly area, including yours truly, and including Brian Westbrook, Angelo Cataldi, Howard Eskin, many more. So please come, 9 a.m., Villanova Law, easy to find. I'll put the Eventbrite in the show notes so you can sign up there. And if you like what you hear from me, again, go to the Sunday 7 newsletter, sign up at Sundays, andrew-brandt.com. Of course, my Instagram and Twitter will have all the information about it as well. Now, without further ado, my colleague, my friend, we get together every 4, 5, 6 weeks. We shoot the breeze. We chop it up on the issues of the business of football. Ross Tucker and I doing the simulcast. If you don't listen to Ross, you should. We'll get together all the time like this. Here's, without further ado, my conversation with Ross Tucker.
All right, Andrew, love when we do this. I don't know, it's once every couple months or so. We'll get you on the show. I'll have you interviewed for the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and we'll use it as a simulcast for the very popular Business of Sports Podcast. Obviously, it goes without saying, but if you like what you hear and you listen to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, or those of you that check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL, you should absolutely check out Andrew's Business of Sports every week, and hopefully vice versa. Those of you that get a chance to check out the Business of Sports every week, it's, as far as I know, it's as good, if not better, than any other Business of Sports podcast out there. It's funny because there's a bunch of them now, but Andrew's kind of the OG, the original, in terms of a Business of Sports podcast. And since I'm not going to get a chance to see him on Friday at Villanova like I did last year, I wanted to at least be able to see him here on the show. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show. As always, are you fired up for Friday's event at Villanova?
Yeah, Ross, always good to be with you. We used to do this all the time back in the day. We're both OGs in this area. But now, like you said, we get together, do this kind of simulcast for each of our podcasts under your network. Every 6 weeks or so. Always love doing it, getting your insights on to my listeners, my insights to your listeners, and everybody should be everybody else's listeners on this thing. Friday, you mentioned, here we are midweek. Friday is our annual symposium at Villanova. So where I have my job running a sports law, sports business program, if anybody's around Philadelphia, you got to come. 9 a.m. at Villanova Law School. It's easy to find in Villanova, PA. And this week, this year's topic is the changing landscape of this sports media. So we're going to talk about how we've moved to streaming, how now everything's on Amazon or Peacock, the rise of podcasts, the rise of all kinds of ways to view games and broadcasts and sports programming. We're going to have executives from all the leagues, Ross. We're going to have Amazon. We're going to have NBC execs. We're going to have some players and their reaction. Our old friend Brian Westbrook will be there, and some local Philly media stars like Angelo Cataldi and Howard Eskin. So we're going to have a lot going on Friday morning. Come anytime between 9 and noon at Villanova Law. Love to see everybody there to sort of see me firsthand and see the insights on stage.
That is awesome. I was there last year. It was a very well-run, well-attended event. I'm happy to report that the food that they had for providing us in the background was delicious. I had like five of those mini sandwiches that they provided. I still remember that. It was excellent. So I don't know if you get those if you just go, but I think that's the only reason why Jack's going, our producer. I think Jack, he says he's going for networking. I think he wants the free food in that back room, the green room, potentially. You know, it's funny, Andrew, that you mentioned the streaming and the changing media landscape. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and it actually came out of the owners' meeting. It's funny, when the owners' meetings happen, I usually think about you. Because when you were with the Packers, correct me if I'm wrong, they obviously don't have an owner. So you were, I don't know if it was always or usually or sometimes, you were essentially one of the Packers' reps at the owners' meetings, right?
Yeah, Ross. Well, every team, to be fair, every team brings more than the owner. You know, they bring a contingent. And just to take people behind the scenes, there are the owner-owner meetings, which our president at the time, Bob Harlan, attended, one per club. Sometimes they allow two per club. It's usually an owner and a kid or whoever is representing the team as a president. I was in the WCE group every year, Ross, and I went every year. That means working club executives, which is just sort of a catch-all for general managers, cap managers, the contingents that went. And be interesting because the competition committee, which was many years ago and still today chaired by Rich McKay, would come in and they basically practice on us. They'd kind of give their presentation on whatever rule changes were going on, and we'd give our insights and our thoughts and our comments and our reactions. And that was to be used for the big meeting with the owners where they would get votes on these topics. So I was in the WC meetings. We weren't the head coaches, or we weren't the presidents or the owners, but these meetings are always a nice gathering. And let me just say, coming from Green Bay, Ross, to sun-soaked locations like Florida and Arizona, we came early and we stayed late. We were the Green Bay guys and Buffalo guys got there like on Friday and stayed till Wednesday instead of Sunday and Monday.
Oh, man, that makes sense. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the biggest news to come out of it, Andrew, was on the media side.
Yeah.
With the NFL putting two games on a Wednesday on Christmas Day, I guess after previously saying they weren't going to do it, I think that that and a couple of the rule changes were the biggest takeaways from last week's NFL owners meeting. Now, I've seen some of your tweets, and I encourage people to follow Andrew at Andrew Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T. I'm at Ross Tucker, NFL. But I've seen some of your posts, but I guess just your reaction. It felt like people were up in arms about it on some level. I guess I was not sure why. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this decision.
First on the Christmas games, I mean, you're right. I don't know if it was Roger Goodell or whoever said last year, well, we're not going to do it if it's on a Wednesday like in 2024. Well, they're right. They're not going to do a Christmas game. They're doing two, right? So they're doing two. And I sort of tweeted out an angry face of Adam Silver because they're going to overtake the NBA, which has traditionally been the spot for Christmas viewing. Yeah, I just don't think there's any limit, Ross, to where they're going to program. And I think the up in arms part is more response to like, they'll never invade Christmas like on a Wednesday. But as you suggested, why not? I mean, whether it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I read that the teams playing on Wednesday will play on Saturday. So it's just like Sunday to Thursday in terms of rest time. It's where we are. You know, it's where we are in this ecosystem of a $20 billion business. Maybe it's 21 by now, 22. They're going to do this for revenue. They're going to do this for the biggest bang for the buck. And the end and the end result, Ross, is we'll watch. You know, we'll watch if it's Tuesday night at midnight. We'll watch. So why wouldn't they do it? And the other thing quickly on the rules changes, I was a little confused, frankly, because what's happened over the last 10 years with kickoffs has been we're kind of really getting rid of them. Because of safety, because it's the most concussive play in football, because the per capita head injuries on kickoffs are a problem. I assumed 5 years ago, by now, we wouldn't have kickoffs. I was wrong. Now they're bringing back kickoffs. And there's different, as you know better than I do, all these different ways the kickoff's going to be run. But it seems to me that there are going to be more kickoffs. Now, are there going to be more concussive plays? Well, starting the coverage team in front, not a running start, maybe that'll take care of it. But that was confusing to me based on the policy about kickoffs we've had the last 5 years.
I got thoughts on both, right? So first of all, and I've said this already on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, but you know, the number one thing I've seen people say about the two Christmas games is the NFL is just being greedy. To which I would say, yes, they are. And I would say, and I put this in a, you know, posted this on social media last week, you know, the players in large part get 48.5% of the revenue or whatever it is, like greed, you know, to use my Michael Douglas from the movie Wall Street, greed right. is good. Like, and all these, like, and we might bring it up too, if we get to the Ohtani stuff and betting, people are always like, oh, the NFL lets the, you know, they take all this gambling money, but they don't let the players participate. Yeah. Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know why the players can't be participating in betting on NFL. Like, this isn't complicated. And in terms of the money they're taking, again, the players get a large portion of that money. Like, greed is good. I never understand that. Like, the NFL, every move they make to try to grow that top number, that benefits the players. They want more money for the risks they're taking with their body. So I don't understand that part of it. And speaking of those risks, I talked with Jeff Miller. He's come on the show multiple times, Andrew. And
I know him well. Yeah.
They feel like the kickoff had become a non-play. Yeah. It was like 22% returns you know, I don't know what data they have about people going to the bathroom or, you know, whatever, but it was basically a non-play. And they believe that that's bad for business, right? Like, this is an entertainment product. You want the sport to be entertained. You don't want to have plays within your game that are non-plays. And so now they think that this will actually be a play that will be eventful and like over 80% returns without, you know, having the same level of injury because, you know, they're not getting these 30, 40 yard head starts at each other anymore. It becomes more of like a running play, really, like almost like a scrimmage play, more so than what ended my career, which is, you know, the crazy collisions on kickoff return.
Two things. I mean, I do want to not push back, but just give a side note on the Christmas games. And I think the pushback a lot of people is because of the statement last year. Again, I don't know if it was Goodell or one of his executives. We're not going to play on Wednesday. I think we have to understand this. And this is the business of sports. I'm speaking as an expert. There's no area that's going to be sacred, right? I think we can sort of lose the idea that there's a sanctity in sports, especially the NFL. Christmas is sacred. Nope. Network television is sacred. Nope. Network television is sacred for the playoffs. Nope. Network television is safe for the divisional round. Probably not. Will network television be sacred for the Super Bowl? Probably in our lifetime, but I can't even say for that. Ads on jerseys. Probably not sacred. Probably not sacred. Alcohol, betting, of course, is no longer sacred. I think we have to recognize that that's tough for, I'm older than you, for my generation, but I'm a realist. You know, as I use the Billy Beane line from Moneyball all the time, adapt or die. This is where we are. Nothing is sacred anymore when the revenue comes in, the business of sports. And quickly, Ross, on the other rule change, the takedown from the side, the hip swivel tackle.
Yeah.
Listen, you know a lot about this better than I do, but to people who say, well, what are you gonna, the defensive players, what are you going to do? You can't tackle high, you can't tackle low, you can't tackle from the side. And my answer is kind of like what you said about greed. Yes. Yes, you can. Because you know what? Tackling doesn't sell. Offense sells. This is a business. Sport points was down last year. Scoring was down. This is what they want. They want more offense. And they want their best players not on the sideline after a hip swivel tackle got them injured. So yes, yes, it's unfair to defensive players. Yes, it is. We want offense.
You know, the one other thing I'll say about the sacred thing, Andrew, which is a great point, the Eagles opener is on a Friday night during football season, during high school football season. You would have thought, the only thing I thought was sacred was Friday nights during high school football season, and yet that's not sacred either. So you can add that to your list. Right. I wanted to get your thoughts on the off-season program, because I'll talk about this a little bit later in just the Ross Tucker football podcast portion of the show, but three teams started their off-season workouts this week. And Andrew, you know, you can speak to this better because you're in Green Bay. I never understood the guys that didn't come to it. I mean, for me, okay, it's $315 now a workout. You get free healthy breakfast, free healthy lunch. If they had three options for lunch, whatever I didn't have, I'd pack up something else, take it home for dinner. I don't, maybe I'm just cheap. Maybe I'm just convenient. I don't know. But like you have the amenities of the team facility. You're around your teammates. You're showing the coaches you're around. But I know that was something you had to deal with in Green Bay.
It was a very geographically undesirable place to work out in the offseason. But I think you've delineated the two levels of player, and I don't mean to denigrate you, Ross, but every player who is not a star, yes, you're going to be there. Because if you're not, it doesn't look good when training camp comes. I had a heck of a time trying to get stars to come for the offseason workout program, even as I changed the contracts to include significant bonuses for working out 85, 90% of the offseason. I had players tell me, Andrew, you can put $10 million in that bonus. I'm not coming. You know, so this is what you do. Now, back in my day and your day, off-season programs were 14 weeks long. And now they're 10, I think, at the most. And it's been a big emphasis by the NFLPA to reduce all that. But yeah, for anyone that is going to turn down that money, it was a lot less when I was there, but that's plus workout bonuses that I put in most players' contracts. They were all in there.
And they still wouldn't come, no matter how much. I mean, I had a teammate, $500,000 for 75% of the workouts in 2002, Andrew, didn't come to one. I was like blown away by that. You know, it's not going to get a lot of attention, but I saw where Taylor Heinicke took a pay cut to stay with the Falcons. Have you had those conversations? Did you ask guys to take pay cuts? That's got to be an awkward one.
No, it totally is. And, you know, we saw this with – I get a lot of Packer fans. We saw this with Aaron Jones. We haven't really talked since the start of free agency. You know, what has to happen – I've been an agent, as you know – is when the team comes to you from the agent side, you have to, whether it's tampering or who cares, you have to find out what that market is if you say no to the pay cut. And you have to judge, like, if I say no to this pay cut, can I get more? Or can I get in a situation where I'm happy, as happy or more? That's a really tough job for an agent. That's where agents earn their money. On the team side, I always talk about credibility, Ross. If you do that to a player like Heinicke and he says no, and he comes back and says no, but I'll do X, Y, Z, you got to be prepared to cut him. So whenever you go to a player saying a pay cut, you have to be prepared for the or else, because naturally the or else is going to be, we're going to release you. If the or else is, my bad, I didn't really mean it. No, you lose credibility not only with that player and agent, but with other players. So these are tough conversations, but it has to come from all parts of the organization. We're going to go to this player. If he says no, we're going to move on. And whether it was Heinicke or other players we've seen this offseason, they decide to stay. Aaron Jones, of course, decided to leave, got what we think is a better job. I'm sorry, better paying job in Minnesota. But I know my Packer fans are still seething, not seething, but sad about Aaron Jones.
What you know, it kind of feels like the Broncos did that to Russell Wilson during the season, and he said, and he did the or else.
Right.
And they kind of said, okay, we'll let you keep playing because they were winning.
Six more weeks. Yeah. Yeah.
That is funny. last thing, you know, Monday night, I watched Caitlin Clark in Iowa against LSU. And I tweeted this, Andrew, at Ross Tucker NFL. I have daughters who are 12 and 10. They're not basketball players. They're not going to be basketball players. And yet everybody talking about it, like, it just made me like so, I don't know, what, like, happy, proud, hopeful. I'm just so thrilled that these young ladies are getting this attention, this spotlight, because they deserve it.
Yeah, Ross, I'm not a girl dad like you. I got boys, but I got chills last night too. And I, like everyone, watched it, and chills more for what Twitter was dominated by it. Everyone's talking about it. I'm in school. All my students are talking about it. The guys, the girls. I feel great for the girls who are sort of hesitant to get into the sports classes I teach. I mean, this is a moment. And it's Caitlin Clark. It's the whole energy from all those games. But she's a phenom. You know, she is a force multiplier in college basketball. She has elevated the product, not just Iowa, not just her, the product. Think about how many people in sports do that. It's very rare. And I've been pushing back against any notion that she would have made more staying at Iowa rather than going pro, because she's going to bring along all the real NIL, which is endorsement money, along with whatever she makes from the WNBA. And I predict, Ross, she will do that in the WNBA. Whatever you think of the WNBA now, it will be much bigger because of that one player. And I use this word sparingly, but I think it's really a well stated phrase. It's, she is a force multiplier and will be in the NBA. And that's going to be great for women's sports in general.
Andrew, you're a force multiplier every time you come on the show. Really appreciate the conversation. Check him out on social at Andrew Brandt. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. Of course, the symposium Friday at Villanova. Business of Sports, Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Thank you so much, Andrew, for the time. Really appreciate it.
This was great as always, Ross. See you soon. Hope you enjoyed that as always. Ross and I always get some good, smart, conversation about football. It's good to do in the off season as we hit this time, getting ready for the draft. I just want to take you behind the scenes as we did. Hope you enjoyed that as always. Again, Sunday 7 newsletter and my videos along with it at andrew-brent.com. Twitter, Andrew Brent, Instagram, Andrew Brent, too. I got some reels going up there. And as always, follow me here on the Business of Sports podcast. Give us a rating. Give us some comments. Always love reading your comments. Hope you find it different and more interesting and insightful than a lot of the podcasts out there. And it's one of a kind in the Business of Sports area. Have a great week, everyone. I'll be back next week with another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brent.